Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Friday, and welcome to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. Each week, Brenda brings you interesting guests and timely topics to uplift and motivate you to be all that you can be today and for all your tomorrows. Join Brenda and Alive to Thrive every Friday at noon Central Time, right here on Greater Good Ministries Radio. And now, here's Brenda Fraser.
Hello and welcome to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser, your host this week and each Friday on Blog Talk Radio. We are still in the just on the cusp here of ending the month of October, which many of you might know is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. But what you might not know are the statistics. And there are some incredible numbers here that I just want to share with you. 1 in 4 women are victims of domestic violence. 1 in 6 have been sexually assaulted or raped. And women account for 85% of all domestic violence victims, men about 15%. And only about 70% are non-fatal attacks that are reported to law enforcement. And 3 out of 4 Americans, which is about 75% of people, personally know someone who has been a victim of domestic violence. It doesn't discriminate. Domestic violence affects people of all ages, ethnic backgrounds, and economic levels. And my guest today is a wonderful woman I met just a few weeks ago. Her pen name is Lady B. Morgan, and she wrote a book called The Pastor's Wife Does Cry. Welcome, Lady B. Are you with us today? Hello? Well, we might be having some technical difficulty on the line, so we will check back here in a minute to see if she's with us on the call here. We are here in Missouri, and we will be also hearing about Safe Connections, which is a program in St. Louis that is having a major event coming up next Wednesday called Voices Ending Violence. And there will be over 300 people at this event to hear a personal story shared by one of their board members, a former radio show guest of mine, Patrice Billings. She will be sharing her personal story next Wednesday at Voices Ending Violence. More information about that is on my Facebook page or on safeconnections.org. Brenda, are you with us? Hello? So, we're having technical difficulties connecting with our guest today, but I'll tell you a little bit about her while she's trying to call in here. So she is formerly the wife of a pastor who she was married to him for 10 years, and she wrote 2 memoirs. The first is called The Pastor's Wife Does Cry, and the other is called Lady B. Morgan, The Extension, under the pseudonym of Lady B. Morgan. She has authored other Christian books, Humbling Thyself, If I Were a Man and Had a Wife, Walking in Righteousness, and Anoint Me, Lord. And she has also written, this is amazing to me, more than 100 copyrighted Christian songs. And she's working on a motion picture called Release. She took her misery and brought it into something positive through her ministry of prayer and faith, and is constantly in service to others. She's currently a member of the Faith Miracle Temple Church, Bishop Larry J. Baylor, senior pastor there, and she was formerly a secretary with the U.S. Department of Defense. She has really overcome quite a bit, which is why I wanted to have her on the show today, and I'm really disappointed that we can't get live connection here with her. Brenda, are you with us? Hello. Well, we will see what happens. Maybe she's trying to call in to the program here. But what impressed me about her is that she is, you know, quietly wonderful. Like a lot of my guests that have been on the program, she has overcome great obstacles to give back to others. She also was diagnosed with motor sensory polyneuropathy in the early 90s, and it's basically a nerve disorder that caused her to lose feeling in her hands and feet, which that alone, there's a story just in that, you know, overcoming that situation. So I have also on the phone Patrice Billings, who will be speaking at Safe Connections next week. She has a very powerful story to share that she'll be sharing at Voices Ending Violence. Patrice, are you with us?
I am. Hi, Brenda.
Hi. Thanks for calling in. I know you were particularly interested in this show today because of the topic and because of your work with Safe Connections. What has been impressed upon you working on the board of Safe Connections?
Well, you know, it's something that I really am very passionate about, as you know, being a survivor myself. But the organization Safe Connections has been around for decades, and they have been an exceptional voice in the community and advocates in the community of the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. And they, you know, they just give a range of services to those that are in need in our community, such as crisis intervention. It's, you know, the first place that people can go when they're at their wit's end, having survived a domestic violence situation, either, you know, recently or in their past. But there's also the 24-hour crisis helpline that is operated around the clock by volunteers and some staff members. But they also have services where they go out in the community for both girls and guys and do outreach and education, which is an important aspect of this organization because they include boys and men in the program because that's, you know, our first line of defense in stopping this insidious problem of domestic violence is to educate our boys and our men. So I just can't say enough about the organization and being on the board. You know, the staff and the executive director, Susan Kidder, are just exceptional in what they do.
Oh, wow. And so how do people get tickets to the event next week? How do they go about if they want to attend? It's at the Crown Plaza in Clayton, correct, at 5:30?
That's correct, and they can go online to safeconnections.org and hit the event button, and there's a information on the Voices Ending Violence dinner, and they can sign up there. The event is absolutely free. Donations will be requested at the end of the evening, whatever the attendee feels in their heart, you know, is an amount that they want to give, but they can go to safeconnections.org and find out more about the event and sign up for it. They can also contact Allison, and that's A-L-L-I-S-O-N, at safeconnections.org, directly through email, and give her their name and anybody else's name that would like to attend, and she'll make sure that there's a place for them.
Okay. Well, thank you, Patrice. Stay with us. We got Lady B. Morgan, also known as Brenda B. Matthews, Minister Brenda Matthews, on the line now with us. I think we had a little technical difficulty. Welcome to the program, Brenda. Are you with us? There's something where I can see her, but I can't hear her. So maybe her mute button's on her phone. So we'll keep trying to connect with her on the program. And we'll continue talking with Patrice about her involvement. So how did you first get involved with Safe Connections, Patrice? How did you hear about this organization? Well, we're having technical difficulties. I'm not sure why. But Brenda, are you with us? Can you hear me? Hello. Well, we've got gremlins left over from last night, I guess, with Halloween being yesterday, why we're having technical difficulties on our streaming of our episode today. I know she's called in and she's on hold and she's trying to connect with us, so I don't know why we can't hear her. So we'll just keep hoping that she'll call in here and that we're able to hear the volume. Not sure why we don't have any volume. And as we know, you know, Blog Talk is less than perfect. It's a do-it-yourself radio station. And sometimes there are glitches, you know. There's no perfect technology. She can hear me. She's texting me on my phone. Yes, Patrice, go ahead.
Yeah. Anyway, I can hear you now for a minute there. I couldn't hear you at all. So if you had another question, go right ahead.
Oh, yes. So, Patrice, I was asking you how you first got involved with Safe Connections.
Well, interestingly, as a police officer, it had been an organization that I had recommended to victims and survivors of domestic violence cases that I would get called out on. That was years and years ago. I was pleasantly surprised when I was invited to a Safe Connections event about 3 years ago, and realized it was the same organization that I used as a resource. But they put on several different programs and events during the year as fundraisers, one of which was their Together Luncheon, which is for women and girls, and it's a powerful panel discussion generally with involving women who have been victims and survivors of domestic violence, and they share their stories and are asked questions from the audience, and it's just a real engaging afternoon and an eye-opening afternoon. So that was my first event with Safe Connections, and that led me to be introduced to Susan Kidder, the executive director, who invited me to take a tour, and subsequently became a proud board member myself.
Okay. Well, I think we have Brenda Matthews now calling in on another phone line that might be working better. So, hello, Brenda, are you with us?
I'm with you. How are you?
Yay! That's persistence, man. It pays off. So thank you for trying. Sometimes different phones work differently with the system. So thank you for trying another phone line and getting through to us. So I did give your introduction already, but just to recap again for those calling in to the program a little bit late or those just now joining us, my guest today is Minister Brenda Matthews. She's a former wife of a pastor and very powerfully shared her story in two books, the first called The Pastor's Wife Does Cry and Lady B. Morgan, The Extension. So welcome to the program, and we were just talking with Patrice about a local nonprofit organization called Safe Connections that works with women that have gone through domestic violence. Tell us your story, if you would, so that people understand, you know, what it was like then and what it's like now.
Well, thank you. My story is I was a pastor's wife. I didn't start off a pastor's wife. I was a minister's wife. And after the very first year of marriage, on our first anniversary, he was installed as pastor. That's how we celebrated our very first anniversary. And after that, then the honeymoon was over. And he got so busy with the church and got so busy with, you know, the people, the work of the church, the people and the ministry and preparing sermons, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so he stopped spending a lot of time at home with the children, with me, and just got caught up in ministry. And so when he was going through his trials and tribulations, he took them out on me. Never physical, but verbal and emotional, financial. But it didn't start. I thought I was just having normal marital issues. They'll get worked out. I did a lot of fasting, a lot of praying. Oh, I'll overcome it. We'll overcome this. But it got worse as the years passed. And then one day, I was reading because he suffered with depression, and it was untreated depression. And so I started studying depression. And I was like, wait a minute, and the symptoms of depression and how those symptoms were really, really real. That's when I learned about domestic violence. I thought domestic violence was just getting beat up physically. But it's not. That's when I learned about the verbal abuse and emotional abuse and, you know, just, you know, financial, spiritual abuse. And I was in. I was in then, so now I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to get out, which was hard because I was a pastor's wife. Just can't leave. Just can't attend another church. I would have ruined his reputation. I would have ruined the ministry and the family, and I had little children. So it was just a big mess. But I kept praying. I kept fasting. I kept writing. The Lord was giving me sermons to write while I was going through. I wrote over 100 songs, gospel songs, blood songs, praise songs, worship songs, all kinds of songs. And that's what kept my mind. So I finally got freed when he moved out in 2007. So Christmas morning 2006, my Christmas present was that he was leaving me. And he did leave in 2007. And after, not long after that, he turned the house back into the bank, leaving me homeless. So I had two, because my house, my name wasn't on the house. It was his house. So I had 2 weeks to move with children. He told me on Christmas Day, you need a plan. I don't know what you're going to do, but you need a plan. And I wasn't working, so I didn't have any money. But the Lord brought to my attention that I had cash buildup on my life insurance policy. So I was able to use that to move, to hire the moving truck and first and last month's rent. You know all of that you need to move. So I had all of that for my life insurance policy. He should have never told me I needed a plan. Now I sell life insurance, and I educate people on the importance of having a whole life policy, because there is cash buildup that you can get, you can use. You don't have to be broke. So the Lord blessed me in that sense. So I really enjoy selling life insurance, especially to women, because I tell my story that I was homeless, you know, and so I'm an insurance agent now, so I have all kinds of plans for seniors, you know, I have plans with long-term care attached to it, I have plans for people who are overweight, because you don't need a medical exam. I just have all kinds of plans. He should have never told me I needed a plan, and then I wrote those two books. And I wrote a movie script entitled Release, because I am now released from all of that. And I have sermons just lined up. And I have books. Those are not my only books. I have books under Brenda Matthews as well. And
right. Well, I want to get back to the years living with him, because I think this is more common than people realize. I've met women who were married to prominent attorneys. There's a book that really hit me hard when I read it. It was called Black and Blue, I think it is, and it was about a woman married to a police officer. I mean, this was a fictional story, but it was very true to life, and she didn't feel like she could report him or because she was married to a police officer. But, you know, whether someone's a lawyer or a doctor or a professional or a minister or pastor, people don't know that, you know, where the resources are as well. I mean, I know women that have gotten divorced and have stayed in the same house because they didn't think they had options, you know, on where to leave. And they didn't have life insurance. So you were blessed that you realized you had this sort of emergency fund that you could tap into. But what do you tell women now that you meet that might still be living in a situation with an abusive person?
I don't have anything for them but prayer and fasting. I'm working on a ministry so that I can have funds for them. I'm also working with a couple of politicians so we can get some laws changed for domestic violence that is not seen, you know, emotional and mental laws for women who are in who are married to prominent people, not just pastors' wives. I just happen to be one because they cannot talk. They cannot share with anybody. My best friend didn't even know. The lady who came to my house to watch my children when we took trips didn't even know because I couldn't tell it. So they found out when their book came out, the first book.
Yeah.
You
can't
talk.
Now, were you scared that, you know, when this book was coming out that, you know, you did use a pseudonym, the Lady B. Morgan, I assume to protect your identity and your family's identity, or talk about that, your decision to use a pseudonym.
Well, actually, he was still pastoring, and I wasn't trying to pull his ministry down or pull him down, so I changed all of the names. I changed the city and state we were in. I always wanted to live in Colorado Springs, so that's the city and state I used that the church was in. And all of the, like I said, all of the names were changed. And in the front of the book, I said, all of the names have been changed to protect the guilty and the innocent. No, to protect the guilty is the other book. I said guilty and innocent because I said because they were not. It wasn't just him. It was the church people, too. It was the members as well. Busting out, you know, scratching up my car and you know, busting my cracking my windshield on the church lot and, you know, my winter coats would be missing and just aggravating, you know. So it wasn't
so
just him.
How freeing was it to write your story? What did that do for your spirit to tell the truth finally and share your story?
I really didn't get a chance to really focus on my feelings because it was written in 7 days because I didn't have to create the story or the characters, just the character's name. So
you wrote your whole little booklet in 1 week?
In 7 days.
Wow.
And
then did you self-publish it?
I have a local publisher. But I typed it and stuff with two fingers. I type with two fingers. I can't type anymore. two fingers. So I have a publisher, but she did, like, the marketing for me. And, you know, like her ISBN and the cover, you know, the layout. But I actually typed it.
And so what have women said to you after they've read the book? Like, what when you meet
Thank
them
you.
Again? What kind of letters have you gotten?
They always say, thank you. Thank you for telling it. Because I'm free to tell it. They're not free. And they always thank me. Because you always think that you're by yourself. When I used to go to the annual conventions, you know, and I would see all of the other pastors' wives, I have a lot of friends all over the world. And, you know, we would meet up at the conventions, you know. I always wondered. And then the pastors' wives, you know, we had our own section seminars for, you know, 3 or 4 days of the week. And I would sit in the class, and the seminars would be on how to stand by your man and how to have tea parties. And, you know, nobody talked about the Jezebels in the church. Nobody talked about the demons in the church and how to deal with your husband, who's the main enemy of your life. So I was always wondering, is anybody else like me? Are all these marriages perfect? Nobody talked about, you know, the real deal that was going on in the church and in the home. So I hated those conferences because they didn't help me. So when I have my conferences, I want conferences that's going to really hit home and help the
people. Right. And to have workshops and speakers and seminars that address all sorts of issues that often people don't talk about, addictions and depression and mental health issues and domestic violence and all these things that affect so many families. Almost every family is touched by something. And, you know, the real ministry is telling the truth and being supportive and not judging, and to have a safe, create a safe space. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to continue talking with my guest, Brenda Matthews. She's now a minister. We want to talk about that and certainly her background with writing gospel songs. I'm very interested to hear more about that. So you're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser. We'll be right back in just a moment. Stay with us as we continue this discussion.
Are you tired of the abuse? Trying to recover after rape or other sexual violence? Are you worried about a friend or a family member? Safe Connections is here for you in the greater St. Louis metropolitan area. We work to reduce the impact and incidence of domestic violence and sexual assault, access referrals, resources, and most of all, compassionate support through our 24-hour crisis helpline. No cost. Call us anytime at 314-531-2003. That's 314-531-2003.
We're open for business. The Greater Good Ministries Book and Gift Shop is now open for business, featuring metaphysical and uplifting books from your favorite authors, such as Doreen Virtue, Wayne Dyer, Michael Edward Owens. We've added handcrafted one-of-a-kind jewelry, pendants, earrings, and bracelets, and now have an exclusive selection of crystals, rocks, and stones for your metaphysical toolbox. Take a look at our hand-dug Arkansas crystals, imported Brazilian crystals, Tibetan crystals, and Reiki healing stones. All of our rocks, crystals, and stones have been Reiki infused, blessed, and cleared, ready for use. You can reserve your copy of Crystal Healing 2012 and Beyond, Reverend B's new book, A Comprehensive Guide of Rocks, Crystals, and Stones for the New Age. Visit ggmradio.com and click Bookshop in the menu bar. That's ggmradio.com.
You're listening to Alive to Thrive with Brenda Fraser on GGM Radio. And now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Alive to Thrive. My name is Brenda Fraser. My guest today is Minister Brenda B. Matthews, also another Brenda. And she's written several books. We were just talking about her book, The Pastor's Wife Does Cry, and about her surviving domestic violence and how that there's emotional and psychological abuse as well as physical abuse. And a lot of people just think it's physical abuse. But I want to move on to her ministry of writing music and gospel songs. She's written over 100 copyrighted Christian songs. Pretty amazing. How did you get into writing music, Brenda?
Well, I hear choirs in my quiet time, in my meditation time. I do a lot of meditation. I'm always, you know, by myself, you know, with the TV not on, and especially when my kids were in school, and I just had the day to spend with the Lord. So So I hear choirs. I hear instruments. I see choirs and visions, and I zero in on one choir member, and that's how I would get the lyrics to my song. So I hear instruments, and I hear the choir. And then I would write down the words, and sometimes it might just be one stanza. And then I'll come back, and the Lord will give me the rest of the song. And then I will record what I heard, sing it on a tape recorder, you know. So that's how
I love this paragraph in your book that says, I've learned about tithing through the lyrics of my songs. I've learned how to trust the Lord through the lyrics of my song. I've learned not to be bitter towards people through the lyrics of my song. I've learned that I could be cleansed and so forth. And I love that. So you're constantly, are you writing every day, or are you working on any new music right now?
On my cell phone right now, I probably have about 25 songs to be completed. I have to take them off of my phone because I run out of space. So on my computer, I probably have another 25 or more songs to be completed. I always hear songs. It's not every day. It's when the Lord gives them to me. And
so,
I did learn how to pay
These are copyrighted now and out. Are they being used all over the country, your music?
No, I have my very first published song. I don't even know if that's the term. I said I was going to look it up. I'm so used to publishing books, I don't even know the term for songs. But it's on Amazon. It's entitled Oh the Glory. It's a worship song. And so that's the very first one. And it has not even been marketed yet. But it is on iTunes and Amazon.
Oh, we should have had you send that to us. We could have played it on the program. Well, you can send that over, and maybe we'll try to get that on one of our future programs. So talk about meditation and silence. You know, this is something that we talk about on this program. We try to encourage people to adopt spiritual practices that will make their life happier and more serene and just have that inner peace. So if someone has never meditated before, never prayed, what do you say to them to tell them about the benefits of meditation and prayer?
This is what the Lord gave me. Psalm 29, where it reads that the voice of the Lord is upon the waters, the voice of the Lord is upon many waters, and the Lord told me to turn the water on and to hear his voice. So when I go into the restroom, I turn the water on. If I'm just putting on makeup, the water is running. If you have a fountain, turn your fountain on. If you have a swimming pool, I haven't been blessed with a swimming pool in my yard yet. But if you have a swimming pool, just sit out by the water. If you go fishing, you know, just, you know, sit out there and just listen to the voice of the Lord. He speaks over the water. When I'm praying in the house, I have the water on. And then when I get done praying, what we usually do is pray and go on about our business, and we wonder why we don't have the answer to our prayers, because you haven't sat still a moment so the Lord can speak. And so after you get done praying, turn the water on, or keep your water on because you already just got through praying, keep it on and just listen. I do more listening to the Lord, especially in the morning. That's how I'm able to hear songs and titles to scriptures and revelation from the Lord, listening with the water on.
And there are also water fountains and things like that that people can get, and even soundtracks of the sounds of water through smartphones now and different technology. I know when I first started meditating, I listened to the sounds of ocean waves, and it was on a little machine. I think I got it at like a Walgreens or something, and I would just sit there for 10 minutes listening to the sounds of the ocean waves. And it's interesting that you should mention the water emphatically as you do, because I never thought about that. But for me, that's how I started, was to stop the chatter in my mind, was to listen to the sounds of the ocean. And now I have a little Zen garden with a little water stream, a pond, and I am blessed with a pool, and I do love the sound of the water. But people can get the sounds through different phone applications, and rather than having your faucet running all day and paying for the water and wasting water, I don't want to encourage people to do that either. But to get out in nature and find water sources out in nature, is fantastic. Also, other places, you talk about in your book having a prayer closet, and that, you know, having that special place where you can go with a notebook, a Bible, if that's, you know, if that's someone's book of choice, but to go and have that special corner of your house where you live, where you can be reflective. Can you talk a little bit more about that? What's your special spot now?
My special spot is my bedroom now, but it has been one corner of my couch. And when I sit on this, I'm sitting on it now, I feel the power of the Lord come up over me. So when my guests come over, I park them right in that spot because I know the Lord is going to speak to them. And they always, always, after they leave, I call them and I say, oh, girl, you know, did the Lord speak to you while you was, you know, sitting on the couch? Yeah, I got a good idea. My nephew is a bishop. And I saw him sitting on the couch holding his daughter. And then I saw him doze off with his daughter in his hand. I said, uh-huh, the Lord is speaking to him. So a few days later, I called him. He said, you know, the Lord gave me a lot of ideas for the church when I know. Because that was my special spot when I was in my house with my husband. That's why I stayed in that spot. And I still got the same couch. But, you know, wherever your spot is, just if you meet the Lord there at the same time every day, I promise you he'll meet you there.
And my mother had a special chair that she used to pray in, and I remember it very, very strongly because she had this special chair, and she had these Easter lilies blooming. This just happened 2 days before she died, and you know, no one knew she was going to die. She was going to, you know, die in a car accident. But she told me that these lilies gave her great peace, the smell of the flowers as she prayed. And, you know, I'm blessed to have that same chair now. And, you know, I think it's very important for people to have that special spot. Make a spot in your house. Make an altar. Put sacred objects. Bring out candles. Light a candle in the morning when you're doing your morning meditation. Buy yourself flowers. I mean, it's something as simple as bringing nature inside your house that to give women permission to buy themselves flowers, you know, or go outside and pick some flowers or pick something that's, you know, attracts you on the side of the road. Here in Missouri, I never saw these in other parts of the country, but we have these big, green, bumpy things that they're known as hedge apples. You know, just pick up some hedge apples. I mean, pick up pieces of nature. They can be branches or sticks or whatever it is that makes your heart sing and connects you to nature and connects you to your definition of your higher power and to getting quiet. So tell us about the movie project released. What is the story and how did you go about writing a movie script?
I asked the Lord to show me how to write a script. And I had a guy who was going to actually produce it or film it for me. He lived in another city. But I had a dream about him, so I was led not to use him. But by that time, my movie script was written. It was copyrighted, and it was registered with the Writers Guild of America. So I still have it in my possession. So I have a few options, you know, happening right now, but it's comprised of the two books, The Pastor's Wife Does Cry and Lady B. Morgan, The Extension. But there's more added to it because things I forgot about. I put it in the movie script. So that's all
So you're looking for people to maybe that might be interested in helping produce this movie, investors as people that are in the industry. So how can that people reach you?
My phone number is 314-420-9603. My
and
email
on
address.
Social media? Go ahead.
I have Facebook, but I don't have time to be on there. I'm not on there. I'm not on there.
That's okay. What's your email? Go ahead. Sorry.
It's Brenda B. Matthews with two T's. @att.net. And, you know,
okay.
My movie is kind of like, I believe it's kind of like The Color Purple. You know how you can't, I asked a girl the other day, I said, tell me what The Color Purple was about. She was like, it has so many things going in it, so many lessons, and it's kind of like that. So it's not just about being a pastor's wife or abused, but it's, you know, how to keep your mind in the midst of trouble. And my husband's first wife and I we became fasting partners. That's rare, you know. I know that's rare. So I have that in the movie. And when I was in the hospital for 4 days, she came over to my house and fed my kids for me, his ex-wife. So that's in the movie. So you don't have to be enemies with your husband's ex-wife or your wife's ex-husband, especially when kids are involved.
And so, and that right there is sort of a big concept for a lot of people. A lot of people, I think, when they're upset with someone, you know, it's just kind of like that off with their heads line from Alice in Wonderland that, you know, they don't have any relation. And you know, let's talk about forgiveness. What are some of your messages when you talk to women or in your ministry about forgiveness, the importance of it and how to practice it?
It gets the weight off of you. When you don't forgive, you're messed up. You heavyweighted, you know, and that's a sin. So why hold on to that? You could be light. You could be free in the spirit, free to pray, free to live for the Lord, free to walk uprightly before the Lord. But with that forgiveness, that's weight. We're supposed to lay aside every weight that so easily beset us. So it's so easy for me to forgive because I've had to do it over the years. I don't know if it came with practice. I don't know. But we
and
have
so
to.
I like the line that you know, holding hatred in your heart is, you know, if you have anger towards someone, it's like drinking the poison. You know, that we come to realize that if you don't forgive, you're hurting yourself more than you're hurting the other person, and the toxin that are in hate and in anger can lead to health issues and can lead to cancer and can lead to various things that we know that stress leads to. That's been proven scientifically. Speaking of health issues, I was really blown away by your disclosure in your book about your health issue that has affected your hands and with feeling in your hands. And because when I met you, I didn't notice that at all. And so you've obviously have been compensating for that with in amazing ways and writing a whole book. It's just amazing to me. When did you first get your diagnosis and tell us about that?
Well, first, you know, as a secretary for the federal government, and when you type, I'm trying to think, one of the thumbs you don't use, I can't remember now, but when your hands are on the keyboard, there's one thumb that you don't use. The other thumb you use to space. I just don't remember which one's now, but
it was the left one you don't use, yeah.
Okay. So it was the left thumb that became numb, okay, and I ignored it. You know, you ignore. I had little kids, you know. Y'all just ignored it. But then the numbness came in that pointer finger, and I started making errors. And I typed over 100 words a minute, error-free. So that was frustrating for me, the error. And I knew I hit the key. And I was like, wow. And then it happened. Then the numbness went to the next finger. And I remember telling my brother, I said, I got a little numbness in my fingers. He said, girl, you better check that out. Well, I said, I think I'm going to go on. So I ended up going to all these different doctors. Nobody could help me. Nobody. But by that time, I went to probably about 7 or 8 different doctors. And one doctor said, your nerves are sick. I'm like, no kidding. But anyway, I ended up, my whole hand was numb. Then it started in each finger of my right hand. So it was really affecting my work. I was dropping things and, you know, couldn't hardly cook. And it was just really a problem. So eventually, probably after about a year or two, I finally got diagnosed with neuropathy from St. Louis University Hospital, neurology department. Finally.
And so that's just a condition you have to learn to live with, that there's no improving that,
yeah.
Or is that a condition of inflammation or?
It's the nerves in my hands and feet. See, I didn't even realize it was my feet because I had surgery on my feet, and my feet were numb, and I just thought that was, you know, just the side effects of having surgery. But it wasn't. So what was your question? I'm sorry.
Well, I was just wondering if there's any treatment for that or if that's something you're going to have for the rest of your life.
I'm going to have it until the Lord heals me. But there is no treatment. There is no medication. There is some pain medicine you can take, but I don't take any pain medication.
Right. Well, I don't either. And I'm a big believer in natural remedies. And so things that, you know, can lower inflammation, like omega-3s and a fruit called mangosteen. There's different things that can help, and we can talk about that later. But, you know, overcoming that disability has taken a lot of inner strength, I'm sure. So, what reservoir of faith did you tap into to deal with that, your health condition?
You know, my focus has always been on other people, whether it was my children or my, cousins and or friends or the church members, and the focus was never on my disability or the thing or inabilities or things I can't do. Everything I do is with prayer. What my disability has caused me to do is increase my prayer life. I think when I have trouble buttoning up blouses, so every time a button is buttoned, I thank the Lord for that. So it really gave me the spirit of thanksgiving. I can't tie shoes, you know, so when I do, it takes me forever to do it. I thank the Lord. I hate when my shoe comes untied at the store or drop some change on the floor. I can't pick it up, and I have to pray and ask the Lord, help me pick it up. I got this long line of people behind me, and when I pick it up, I thank the Lord. When I'm cooking and I have to move the skillet from one eye to the next without dropping it, I just ask the Lord for strength. When I move it, I thank him for it. So it really increased my prayer life. That's what it is. So it really became a blessing. I can't comb my hair anymore, and I had a daughter. I had three sons. Take them to the barbershop. But when I had my daughter, I'm like, Lord, how in the world am I going to be able to comb my hair? A lady from the church, I prayed for help. A lady from the church, she took my daughter every single weekend. Every Friday, she picked her up and brought her to church on Sunday. So I didn't have to worry with her hair. She took her to the beauty shop. She's 15 now. Now she goes to the beauty shop. So God has really blessed me along the way. And then my son was left-handed. I'm like, Lord, how am I going to teach him how to write? I can't write, and I'm right-handed. And then when I got married, I had already had my boy. So when I got married, my husband happened to be left-handed, so I didn't have to worry about that. So everything I do is from prayer and fasting. Mm.
Well, and you talk about long-suffering, and I like this quote here. No one likes to suffer, but we must know that there are blessings in suffering. And, that sounds like a Mother Teresa quote, you know, but that there are lessons that we're learning and that, I mentor a lot of women. I do life coaching, and I tell people, you know, we're here for lessons. And, you know, it's just like one big giant school. And we go through these different lessons, and, you know, as we're going through them, it seems like the end of the world. But just knowing this too shall pass, that, you know, there's a lesson. What is the lesson in this? And whatever it is, you know, financial hardship, car accidents, you talk about parking tickets or speeding tickets, like if you ignore the problem, it just gets double, triple, you know, 10 times worse if you ignore dealing with it. But if you face it head on and go through it and get support, get a faith community, get a prayer practice, there is light at the end of the tunnel, as you say, during our suffering. To just remember, there's always light at the end of the tunnel. Can you talk about that, what you've learned about suffering and tribulation?
I've learned to depend upon the Lord and not on man. I've learned that the promises of the Lord are yea and amen, and the promises of the Lord, the promises of men are yea and nay. Either they're going to keep the promise or they're not. So I stop fooling with the promises of man and just start focusing on the promises of the Lord. So any promise that I come across in the Bible, I write it down. I know that I can stand on it, and I know that his word is true, his word is pure. So I learned in suffering just to depend on the Lord. He will keep your mind. He says it this way, he'll keep your mind if it's stayed on him. So you don't have to be stressed out. You don't have to be depressed. You don't have to take medication. If your mind is really and truly stayed up on the Lord, people say they love the Lord, you know. I really, truly love the Lord. I'm fascinated. When I turn on the TV, I'm looking for a word from the Lord. When I open up a book, it's only on prayer, fasting, demonology, something that's going to help others. You know, if you really love the Lord, it'll be known. I love reading the Word. I hate when I have to stop reading the Word. I love going to Bible class. I really and truly delight myself in the Lord. Everybody don't do that. They preach it. They say it. They talk it. But it's not the truth. I really and truly delight myself.
Can you point to a particular spiritual experience you had or a spiritual awakening, a particular moment in time where you said, you know, a lot of people aren't sort of born and grown up in the kind of deep faith that comes over a lifetime of spiritual practice, but...
I didn't have a lifetime of spiritual practice. I was getting high, drinking. I carried gin in my purse. I carried gin and vodka in my purse, but I love my whiskey sours. I partied. I was at the club. I smoked 2 packs of cigarettes a day. So I started out, my parents started us off in church, but that ended like in second or third grade. After that, I taught myself how to cuss. Ooh, I could cuss, spoke out. But it was later. But at the same time, I always loved gospel music. So when I come home from the club full of alcohol, the Lord had me reading Proverbs. Could never tell anybody. I couldn't tell my best friend, girl, when I get home from the club, because I was ashamed. I'm reading Proverbs. Oh, my best friend is saved too now. But so it wasn't always. I didn't grow up just all in the Word. That didn't happen.
Get sober or at some point decide to change everything about your life at that point?
I'm a dreamer. So the Lord always showed me things in dreams. And one day I had a dream that when I get my next check to pay this church, I grew up in, to send some money to this church. And I sent, because something was wrong with their electric. They were having problems with their electric, and they needed money. And I did that. I couldn't think until I got it done. I was like, this pastor's not going to remember me. I hadn't been there since second grade. I'm in my 20s now. And I did that. And I was telling my mother about it, and she called him. And he thanked my mother, you know, that I sent the check. So I kept having dreams and stuff like that. But I ended up marrying a man who was strung out on crack cocaine. So then is when the change really came. It was like, this is the time to be for real with the Lord, because I had a dream. And the Lord said, when you get paid, go and buy a Bible and put your name on the Bible. I still got the Bible. The Bible was raggedy as I don't know what, but I still have it. And I started reading it, and it was hard. So I started drinking my beer. Because the beer calmed my nerves. Every time I read the Bible, I was thinking about electric bill, gas bill. You know, kids, like I do, like I do. All I was reading, I couldn't comprehend. So I started buying beer because it gave me peace of mind to read the Bible. The more I read, the less beer I drank, the less beer I bought, and eventually there was no more beer. That's how I did it. I don't encourage that, but that's how it happened for me. And from then on, it was just on. It was on from there. I didn't have a church home. I didn't have a pastor, nothing like that. It was just me and the Lord.
So it was a very personal experience, one-on-one with your higher power, and that has deepened. And then now you are able to not only have a community of faith and a worship with others, but now writing sermons is another big thing that you spend time doing. And you write sermons for other people besides yourself?
No, I was writing sermons when I was with my husband, and I wasn't called into the ministry. I was writing sermons before I was called. So I thought I was writing sermons for him, and that wasn't the case. Those sermons were for me, which I was called later, like in 2004, something like that.
And so what's your work now with women ministers? I met you at a conference of women minister women in the ministry with AME. What's your focus now with women in ministry?
With women in ministry?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a minister at the church, but I'm not over the women's ministry there. I'm over the author's ministry in my church. And we have a publishing company, and we're just starting that. But my focus is to help women who are married to public figures, because I have pastors' wives calling me for help. So I just feel like it is my responsibility because I'm free. I had a lady call me a couple of months ago, 65 years old. Her husband left her. He's an apostle. Her husband left her, and she has no job. She's 65, so she's looking for a job right now. So it's like when I hear stories like that, it's like I got to hurry up and do something. I got to do something now. So I got a name of a ministry, but I have it registered through Secretary of State, haven't gone any further than that, and it's called Extend Your Hand. That's the name of it. I haven't gotten any further than that, but it's to help these women who are in trouble. Her house note is 7 months behind. I'm supposed to have money for her, and I don't have it.
So Extend Your Hand will be a nonprofit organization that you will want to set up to help women in that are either leaving bad marriages or needing to start over?
Yes, and men, because you have
mm-hmm.
a lot of female pastors now.
Mm-hmm. And help men as well. Well, thank you so much. Are there any closing thoughts that you want to leave us with for this November 1st, All Saints Day?
I will say increase your prayer lives. Partake in the Daniel Fast Chapter 1. For wisdom and understanding in all dreams and visions, and it is a blessing. All vegetables and water for 10 days. I used to do that once a month, 10 days, vegetables and water, and the Lord will show you some things.
So that's a type of fast. It's just vegetables and water for 10 days.
Vegetables and water for 10 days. That's one of the Daniel fasts that I partake in. Wisdom. Excellent skill in anything you're trying to learn, you have excellent skill in it. It's powerful. And Daniel had, the Bible said Daniel was ten times better than the magicians and the astrologers in his knowledge. But the Lord told me with this fast, you'll be 10 times sharper in him than the magicians are with magic and with the astrologers are with astrology, because you know that is not real. And that's the word for today.
Well, that's a great way to sign off. Thank you so much, Brenda, and we look forward to seeing more books and the movie and other things that you're going to be working on. So thank you so much for helping so many other women.
All right, thank you. Thank you.
All right, take care. Have a great weekend. We'll be back next week. My guest is a playwright, and we will be continuing through November with Attitude of Gratitude and talking about the Thankful Project at the end of the month. Thank you so much, everyone. See you next week on Alive to Thrive.